Chapter 2. Detachment and Preparations. I have already related my experiences with the yogi in the previous letter. Now, according to your wishes, I will give a brief account of my early life story in a sequence. After my meeting with the yogi, the main incidents are as follows. My father was thinking of yoking me to a government service when Deputy Commissioner of Ludhiana sent me an appointment letter, posting me as personal assistant of inoculation officer in Samrara Tehsil. My elder brother, Siddharth Bansingh Singh, also received a similar appointment letter, posting him in Jagraon Tehsil. My father, friends, relatives persuaded me to accept this job as a matter of duty. My father explained to me that to serve humanity was to serve God, and this was the best opportunity to please God. I at once departed to take up the appointment. Although I had not been baptized as a Khalsa, I started following the code of conduct necessary for a Khalsa much earlier, and took meals prepared by a non-smoker. So I took with me a Sikh cook. I reported to the medical officer who was camping in the village Khedi. He was one of those medical officers who had just come from England and were posted as supervisors in every tehsil. They did not know any other language except English, so only those who knew and could speak English fluently were appointed as their personal assistants. I had just come out of college, so I could speak English fairly well. I took charge from the Naib Tehsildar, who did not know English. The medical officer posted as plague inoculation officer had quite a large staff with him. The first difficulty I encountered was the corrupt practice of drawing money out for rations of the staff from charity fund against fictitious receipts. As the staff had camped there for many days, this corrupt practice had been going on all the time, and the charity funds had been misappropriated in all the villages. I had come up with the idea of serving humanity, so I could not tolerate such corrupt practices. I sent for the whole staff, including the assistant surgeon, head clerk, compounders, and others. I also sent for the village headman and the shopkeepers. I asked everyone to pay his own bills. I was the first to pay for a day's ration, which I had bought and took receipt for it. I was persuaded to accept the rations free and not to worry about payments and receipt, but I strongly reprimanded them for making such evil suggestion and explained to them that the charity fund was for the poor, the crippled, destitute, and the diseased people. Why should they commit the shameful crime of misappropriating such money? On being put to shame for such practices, everyone had to pay for his rations, and was given a receipt, but everyone turned against me. To them this came as a shock. Persons whose pay was only ten rupees per month had to pay about 8 annas per day. Senior staff members had to pay much more. The inoculation officer knew nothing about these corrupt practices. His cook took money from him for his rations, but acquired the rations free from charity funds. He was now in serious trouble. He incited the staff against me, and they all reported to the inoculation officer that the new Naib Tehsildar was unnecessarily harassing them. He sent for me and asked me to explain this situation. I asked the inoculation officer to tell me how much he had paid to the cook so far for his rations. He at once took out his indent book and showed me the amount spent by him. I sent for the shopkeepers, and on checking the actual amount paid to them, for which receipts were required, it was found that the cook had spent only one-third of what he had taken from the inoculation officer. The cook had misappropriated the rest. On being exposed, the cook had now to pay the amount. The inoculation officer was cut to the quick. He at once ordered the dismissal of the servant and wanted to take legal action against him. The bear begged for forgiveness and fell at my feet, pathetically pleading for being saved from severe punishment. I felt pity and requested the inoculation not to take legal action against him, but to be cautious in future. I also suggested that he may be retained till he gets a new servant, otherwise he might encounter some difficulties during the tour. He could be dismissed as soon as another cook was available. He agreed to my request. He was deeply impressed and remarked, "I generally heard that Sikhs were very honest and truthful. I found it to be quite true." I told him that I was only a candidate for Sikhism and not a Sikh. I had not yet attained even an iota of the remarkable character which enlightened Sikhs reveal through their actions. From that day onward, he became an intimate friend of, and even handed me over to me his personal accounts. He now had to spend only 3 or 4 rupees where he had formerly spent 10 rupees daily. I also did not allow anyone to use a single penny out of the charitable funds. For about a month I kept his account, and when his normal expenditure was correctly set, I handed it over to him, because I could not perform my other duties well, as it took a lot of my time, thus passed some months. After some time, today officials put him into the habit of accepting gifts, which amounted to bribery. When I came to know about it, I sent for the Zeldar and other subordinates and ordered them not to take any gifts to the inoculation officer without my permission. On hearing this, the inoculation officer was extremely annoyed. He sent for me and told me that this order was an insult to him, more so because I did not even refer to the matter to him. I told him that the deputy commissioner had given special instruction in this direction by telling me that I should not let any untoward thing happen which might harm his reputation, and that I would be held responsible for such a thing, as he was new to this country. These people were today flatterers, and they brought those gifts with some selfish ulterior motive, and continued to annoy him with improper requests, so I stopped them from offering such gifts to him. The inoculation officer says, "What is improper in this?" I reply, "They bring them as tempting gifts." The inoculation officer replied, "What is wrong in accepting gifts?" And to that I replied, "I considered it to be a type of bribery. I do not want that by offering such gifts that they may tempt you to accept bribery." To this he replied, "Did the deputy commissioner give you these instructions? Is not accepting gifts and presents a custom in this country? If it is not custom, why do these people bring these gifts? If it is a custom, then why do you object it?" To this I replied, "I do not have special instructions. I consider giving and accepting bribe an evil thing. According to my religious principles, it is sin, and according to the law of our countries, it is a crime. If an evil act is widely practiced in this country, it does not become a customary law. I do not know whether it is a normal custom in your country. I know of no custom in this country which sanctions this practice, but the dictates of my conscience tells me that this is immoral. Such a custom, which takes the shape of immoral and illegal activities, should not be sanctioned in any God-fearing society. I stop this practice here, lest you may get into the habit of accepting this form of bribe." After such a lengthy discussion with the inoculation officer, he felt a little ashamed about it. After 2 days, he went to the deputy commissioner and discussed the matter of accepting gifts. When he came back, he told me that he had discussed the matter with the deputy commissioner, in whose opinion to accept gifts and to spend money from charity funds for personal needs was an ordinary thing and a normal practice. All the officers, including the commissioner, accepted gifts and everyone used some money for personal expenditure out of charity funds. I asked him to tell the deputy commissioner that all those who use those funds meant for people suffering from leprosy and other diseases will themselves become victims of such terrible diseases if they continue to use this money. Those who misuse these funds should be considered mentally corrupt. They will certainly be punished by God for misappropriating these funds. I also asked him to tell the deputy commissioner that, in my opinion, accepting gifts was as bad as accepting bribery, and I could prove it to him if he so wished. The inoculation officer reported my views to the deputy commissioner verbatim. I was called for an explanation. I fearlessly gave arguments and proved from the moral, legal, and social point of view that it was a crime and a sin to use money from charity funds for personal purposes, and that accepting gifts from the people amounted to bribery. The deputy commissioner was greatly impressed, and when he started praising me, I slipped out of his office because I did not like to hear my own praise. However, on that day I was convinced that the whole staff of this government department was thoroughly corrupt, and by joining the staff of man only ruined his moral and spiritual future. As a matter of duty, I continued to do the work assigned to me. I was seriously upset. On seeing corruption rampant from top to bottom, it was difficult to believe that the government service could ever be a service to humanity. Far from appearing to be a service of humanity, it now appeared to be a cursed slavery of imperialism. To sell your soul and damn your faith was its only reward. There was always a danger of the mind and spirit getting misdirected. My soul aspired to lead a purely spiritual life. My spiritual aspirations were at times seriously disturbed. Every time I faltered, I sought a moral and spiritual support from Gurbani. As Guru Arjan says, "Traveler on the path of life, the road is rough and stony. Beware lest you have a fall, and the injury leaves a scar." This fear was always there lest amidst such corrupt surroundings I might suffer a fall. I got up early in the morning, and after taking my bath, I recited my prayers and thus spiritually strengthened my mind. As soon as I rode my horse to resume my duty, and subordinates saluted me, vanity began to overpower my mind. In its finer form, some egoism was always aroused, but by the grace of the Guru, I became aware of it immediately, and I sought the help of Gurbani to strengthen my mind. Almost the whole day in this inner struggle against the temptation of vanity was always there. In the evening after Dadas, I felt revived of this poison. Early one morning, some British officers got ready for hunting expedition and desired that I should accompany him. I was sitting in my tent absorbed in prayers. They ordered me to accompany them, but I went on with my prayers. They tried to disturb me, but I continued prayers undisturbed. During the day, they asked for an explanation. I told them plainly that if in future they tried to disturb me when I was praying, I would immediately submit my resignation. It was not my duty to take my officers out hunting expeditions. I had my duty towards God also, and all worldly duties must follow my religious duty to God. On hearing my explanation, they relented and extended a formal apology. Dr. Fisher was very fond of religious discussion, and one day the discussion somehow turned into the question whether meat is a human diet or not. I wanted to avoid discussion and said that I will give my views on some proper occasion. It so happened that one day our tour was lengthened. Our staff, including Dr. Fisher's personal attendants and the cook, were left far behind. We were far ahead on our horses, trying to find a place for pitching our camps. Dr. Fisher felt very hungry, and hunger was one thing that he could not endure. We were to camp at Jodan Masuran. As Dr. Fisher wanted something to eat immediately, I suggested that we could take some berries from a tree nearby. I plucked some berries and gave them to him. His hunger sharpened still more. He climbed the tree and shook its branches to fell the berries. I picked them up, and when he came down from the tree, we shared half and half. He was eating the berries at a very slow speed. During that same time, I finished eating a handful of them. Just then, a farmer brought about a dozen sugar canes. I peeled the sugar canes with my teeth, while he had to use his knife. He had taken only one sugar cane, during which period I was able to finish 5 full sugar canes. He was surprised, and asked me, why were my teeth so strong? To him, I told him, it is because I do not take meat, nor did my forefathers ever take meat. But your teeth are bad because you people eat meat. Take meat. Meat-eating animals naturally have such teeth which are not spoiled by eating meat, and that they never become weak. Meat is not the natural diet of man. That is why when a human being takes meat, his teeth get spoiled in a young age. In families in which teeth is eaten generation after generation, children inherit weak teeth. Carnivorous animals eat even raw meat, and yet their teeth remain strong as ever. Nature has given them a special type of teeth which is suitable for eating flesh. The doctor was pleased to hear that argument and said, you have at last answered the question I raised the other day. There were similar discussions with Dr. Fisher on many subjects, and one such lengthy discussion was on the subject. Is the worship of Guru Granth Sahib idolatry, which later took the form of a book? After about a year, the inoculation department was wound up and Dr. Fisher had to go. Before he went, he strongly recommended me for the post of a tahsildar to the chief secretary and the governor of Punjab. They promised to give me the post as soon as my application reached them through proper channel, i.e. through the deputy commissioner. Dr. Fisher was given assurance that I would be given the first post. He told me about his recommendation before he left.